Blog Talk Radio.
Happy New Year, everybody. Thanks for joining me on this 2nd of January to sum up 2015 and get a wrap on the previous year. Kind of, you know, I was making a list of all the things that I think were important to 2015. And, you know, I'm a positive guy. And I said, you know, I want to make this show positive. I want to highlight some positive things. So I made a list of everything happening during 2015. And good riddance. What an awful, pathetic year, at least when it comes to the world out there. I mean, hopefully for each of us, every year is a better year. Every year is a year in which you make your life a little bit better and where you've achieved the goals you set out to achieve. But from a political, philosophical, from a state of the culture perspective, oh my God, good riddance 2016. I wanted to be positive, but it was really, really difficult. We'll get to some positive things, and there are some positives to talk about in 2016. Of course, if you have some things that are particularly of concern on the negative or of positive, things that happen to you or that you see in the world out there, or that you see in the culture, give us a call and you know, we'll talk about that. I'm eager to get calls today to hear what you think about 2015, 347-324-3075. Don't forget that after you call to kind of, I think it's press 1 to let me know that you're calling, not just to listen to show, but you're actually calling to ask a question. That's 347-324-3075. I'm interested in what you thought of 2015, and at some point we'll get to kind of the movies that I saw in 2015. I'm not going to say the best or worst movies of 2015 because I didn't actually see that many movies this last year, which is surprising for me. But so I'll just give you some of the highlights, my highlights of 2015 in terms of movies. You know, TV shows, music performances, good stuff that happened to you during 2015, let us know. And of course, let's all continue the fight to make 2016 a better year than 2015. Although, given what I'm seeing in 2015, it's going to be tough. We have already got a call. I'm going to take this call. See, hi, you're on the Iran Book Show. Who's this?
Aloha, it's Stuart.
Hey, Stuart, how's it going?
For me, 2016 is off to a pretty good start.
I can't complain
so far.
That's good. Well, you live in Hawaii. You can't complain generally.
That's true.
Yeah, I think you just can't complain.
Well, our state is all Democrat, but, you know, I survive somehow.
Yeah, you have compensating factors. So, so what stands out for you in 2015?
Well, in 2015, I learned of two stories that I found really inspiring, both involving people crossing borders illegally to find greater freedom. And although a lot of our conservative and GOP friends might disagree, I think these stories exemplify free enterprise that should be free.
Great. So tell me, what are the stories?
The first one is called Spare Parts. It was actually an article in Wired magazine in 2014, and it became a documentary called Underwater Dreams. And in 2015, it was made into a motion picture and also a book by the author of the Wired article.
Okay.
And I think the true story...
I need to go see it.
Yeah, and it's about how there are these kids in Arizona, Carl Hayden High School. They're in the ghetto. Most of them are illegal aliens. Kids got together, and they started a robot building club. And they actually, they're in high school now, and they're very poor, and they're all illegal aliens. And they came when they were babies. So they're, you know, what are called anchor babies. And what happened was they built their own robot, and they went to a college competition. They went up against MIT. And the task was they put a robot underwater. Each team has its own robot that they built themselves, you know, designed themselves.
Yeah,
it has to
yeah.
go underwater and extract the liquid from the submerged object. And MIT couldn't perform the task. Their robot failed. But the kids from Carl Hayden High School, they succeeded. And they won the competition. They beat MIT.
That's terrific. It's an inspiring story. What was the second one?
Second one is called In Order to Live. It's a book that came out this year by Yeonmi Park. She lived in North Korea.
I've heard about this book.
Yeah, it's in life in North Korea is so extreme that often North Koreans illegally cross the border into China. And North Korea is so extreme that when they get to China, they think it's free. And this was a really amazing story. I mean, the way Yeonmi Park thinks, it's not a cliche story at all. Like, she talks about how people shouldn't take their wealth for granted, but she's different than that. She says, wealth is beautiful. And she said, you know, people, so you, she said when she first saw toilet paper, she marveled at it. She said they put a fragrance on it to smell good, and to her it was so fancy, she didn't want to use it. To her,
yep.
you know, and she says
yep.
very explicitly, when you start trading for yourself, you start thinking for yourself, unquote. You know,
that's amazing.
And by the end, she says, and this is dramatized through her telling, but she says very explicitly in her own words, you know, at long last, finally, I understand, my life belongs to me.
Oh wow, good for her. So, if somebody sent her a copy of Atlas Shrugged.
I'll have to get
a hold of her and send her one.
Yeah. She likes
those
Animal
are great.
Farm, but
yeah, those are great stories. I mean, and they reinforce the idea, an idea I believe in, and I know that many people out there, including many objectivists, but many on the right, are opposed to. But that the idea that immigration is a negative positive for this country, bringing in people who appreciate the value of this country, who appreciate the greatness of this country and what this country and appreciate freedom because they grew up under oppressive regimes, that immigration is a massive net positive for the United States. And put aside the whole Muslim issue and all of that, we'll get to that in a little while on the show. But at its core, this country really is a country of immigrants. The United States of America should continue to become an immigrant, and we should encourage, not suppress immigration into the U.S. I would say, including people from oppressive regimes, including people from socialist regimes, because they appreciate the kind of freedom that's still afforded in this country, and they rejuvenate those positives within the country. And it's a sad, sad day. And I'd say one of the great negatives of 2015 is the huge, huge anti-immigration push that we have seen throughout this year, particularly on the Republican side. Stuart, really appreciate the call and appreciate you orienting the conversation on some positives. Thanks.
Mahalo.
And mahalo. Continue to enjoy Hawaii and continue listening to the Iran Brooks Show. All right. So Stuart kind of shifted us onto some positives, but in spite of that, I want to start the year off, the analysis of the year off, in my analysis of what I think the important trends were. And I think, unfortunately, most of the important trends were negative. And these are global trends. They're not just U.S. trends, but they had a huge impact in the U.S. So let's talk about what's going on in the world, what happened in 2015, where these trends are heading. And I'm not going to go deeply into any of them. We've done on many of them. I've done whole shows, and you can go back into the history of the Yaron Brook Show and the archives and find many of them. So I encourage you to do that. I want to highlight a few of the kind of what I consider the big issues, the big trends, the big things that are really, you know, pushing forward. And the sad thing is, at least as it comes to the United States, and I think to Europe, I think the big trend, which is continuing, the big trend that has not been reversed, is the decline of Western civilization. It's a decline of Europe and the decline of the United States of America. And yeah, there's some positives going on in the world. We can talk about them. We'll talk about Latin America and the definitely some positive trends in Latin America, some movements both in Brazil, in Argentina, and in Venezuela towards more positive outcomes. And that is really interesting and important, and I think and certainly positive. We can also talk about some positives that are going on in parts of Eastern Europe where they know freedom. And we'll talk about other positives. So we'll definitely get there. But what are the big trends? What are the most troublesome events of the last year? Let's start with that. And I'd say the issue that most concerns me, the issue that I think all of you should be most concerned about, that has come under sustained attack over the last year, really almost exactly January 7th was its real manifestation in bloody terms in Paris, nonetheless. And that's the issue of free speech. The issue of free speech. Free speech is under massive attack all over the Western world. And here, for the sake of our discussion right now, when I refer to Western world, I'm talking about the United States and Europe, or Northern, I'll include Canada. Canada's deep into this free speech issue as well. It really hit the headlines, really hit us hard. And really, the first show, those of you remember, those of you might have been listening to the Yaron Brook Show from the beginning, the first show that we ever did on the Yaron Brook Show was a show I did spontaneously. I was planning to start it out a few days later. I was planning to do a practice run, and Charlie Hebdo happened. And we walked into studio and made the show live, and that was the first show of the Yaron Brook Show. And it was about free speech. And it was about what happened to Charlie Hebdo. And it was about the pathetic response of the West to what happened to Charlie Hebdo. And now, with a year's context, with a year of looking back, free speech, you know, Charlie Hebdo, no positive impact. That is, people thought, or one would have thought, that once the West saw the brutality of the Muslim, the Islamic attack on Charlie Hebdo, the attempt to silence cartoonists, the attempt to silence critics of religion, that there would be a backlash, more cartoons would be published, more people would speak up, more people would stand up for free speech. What you actually got was the reverse. What you saw throughout Europe, and to some extent the United States, is cowering, it's fear, it's silencing, self-censorship throughout. So just like 9/11 was not a wake-up call in terms of the threat of jihadism, Charlie Hebdo was not a wake-up call to the threat to free speech. And indeed, I don't believe there can be an existential wake-up call. I don't believe it is possible any kind of terrorist event that will wake people up, not in a fundamental sense, not in the sense of actually realizing who the enemy is and being and embracing the willingness to actually combat them. There's nothing that can happen. A nuke in New York Really? What will they do? Really? We'd nuke Iran? No, we wouldn't. Would we attack Iran if it was linked to the Iranians? If it was some Saudis that planted it, would we attack Saudi Arabia? Maybe, but not in any fundamental sense. Not in the sense of identifying the enemy as jihadism and uprooting the whole ideology. Anybody who supports it, destroying everybody. No, I still don't think we would do that. Anyway, I'll get to terrorism in a minute. But free speech is much bigger than terrorism. After Charlie Hebdo, silence. 2 million people on the streets with Je Suis Charlie buttons on, and yet nothing. No rally for free speech. If the rally was a rally, it was against violence, but violence by what they call them, extremists. Not violence by governments to silence us, because that's what's happening all over Europe. And the European Union in Brussels is planning to increase its hate speech laws, to expand them. And then we saw the same thing in the United States. Who would have thought that people would be attacked violently with guns for expressing an opinion in the United States of America? And yet that's exactly what happened in Garland, Texas. But nobody even remembers Garland, Texas. To me, Garland, Texas is easily one of the top 10 most important events to happen in the United States over the last year. Because really, at least in modern times, at least in recent times, the first time that violence was attempted to silence political speech, critical of religion. I'm sure it's happened. Oh, it's semi-automatic weapons. It drove up to a peaceful gathering of a cartoon competition and try to shoot it up, try to murder everybody inside. And what was the response of the, I mean, there have been threats, but I'm talking about actual weapons being used, taken out, going after people in the United States. What Paul commented on Garland, what they've said was, they asked for it. They said they asked for it. That's what Donald Trump implied. That's what Bill O'Reilly implied. That's what Fox refused to show the cartoon that won the competition, even though it was extraordinarily relevant to the news. It was a cartoon competition. It did ultimately show it on the Stossel show, but he refused at the time to show it. Right? So there's actually attacks in the United States on people drawing cartoons, actual violence, made real. I mean, these threats towards people have been going on for years and years and years, right? The threats have been going on for years and years and years. People are in hiding because of these threats. But here was an attack, an actual attack. And what was the response? People yawned, people shrugged, people blamed the organizers of the cartoon competition. All right. So that's Islamic threats. But it, if that were all, I wouldn't be worried. I mean, the fact is, if that were all, I would not be worried. The Muslim threat can be dealt with easily. It's the fact that we now have in Europe hate speech laws. That in the United States on campuses, you can't speak. You have to have safe zones. You can't express controversial points of view because they might trigger somebody. Micro-triggering. You might offend. Offensive speech is banned on many campuses. If we can't offend, what's the point of having free speech? Free speech is to protect the offender. It's to protect offensive speech. So, all through the West, not just with regard to Muslims, but in a much broader sense. The Islam is the trigger. They're the ones who are making this such a big deal, and they're pushing the hate speech button in ways that it hasn't been pushed before. But on American campuses, it's not Islam. It's this radical leftist egalitarian agenda. It is the rise of emotionalism above all. It is the worship of emotion above reason. And in a sense, that's the theme of 2015. The theme of 2015 is the rise of emotionalism. The rise of emotionalism and the decline of a respect for reason. And that's just a theme throughout all this. It's all about emotion. Forget argument. Forget rational thought. Forget rational discussion. Speech is under attack everywhere in the world, including the United States. And that, to me, is the biggest threat. And it's something nobody talks about. Nobody talks about. You know, the one presidential candidate that has said some good things about it is Ted Cruz. But he's the only one. And he combines saying those good things with a lot of dumb things that he says. All right. So free speech, my number one issue from 2015 to be concerned about. Not that it all happened in 2015, but 2015 made it real. It started with making it very real, with blood in the streets, with the lives of cartoonists taken for expressing a point of view. And it unfolded with stories of micro-triggering on campuses, with Garland, Texas, with demonstrations on campus to silence professors, to silence free speech. All right, if you have, what horrifies you about 2015? What horrifies you about the prospects for 2016? We're doing negatives right now. I promise we'll get to the positives, although, unfortunately, the negatives outnumber the positives, at least on my list. All right, we're going to take a quick break, 3-minute break, and we'll be right back.
With adoring fans, rabid critics, and very few in between, why does Atlas Shrugged evoke such impassioned responses? Because it grapples with the fundamental problems of human existence, and it presents radically new answers. Atlas Shrugged challenges many conventional notions about good and evil, that sex is a low animal desire, that money is the root of evil, that man is sinful by nature. One of the most prominent is the notion that selfishness is evil and self-sacrifice is good. Atlas Shrugged is a dramatization of Ayn Rand's unique vision of existence and of man's highest potential. 12 years in the writing, it is her masterwork. Rand's worldview emerges in the plot turns of this compelling mystery, centered on one question: who is John Galt? There are many legends. Which of these is true? Is he the man who discovered the Fountain of Youth? The man who found the lost city of Atlantis? A modern Prometheus? Does he even exist? And why, if no one knows the answer, does the entire world know his name? Find out the answer when you read the novel that sparked a philosophical revolution. Order it today on Amazon.com.
The Ayn Rand Institute campus is an exciting online destination offering free e-courses on Ayn Rand and her revolutionary philosophy of objectivism. Whether you recently picked up your first Rand book or have been reading her novels and nonfiction for years, ARI Campus has something for you. On campus, you'll discover a variety of multimedia courses covering Rand's literary classics, specific aspects of thought, and how to apply her ideas to your life. Get started today at campus.aynrand.org. See you on campus.
In 1934, Ayn Rand wrote to journalist and essayist H.L. Mencken, "Perhaps it may seem a lost cause at present, and there are those who will say that I am too late, that I can only hope to be the last fighter for a mode of thinking which has no place in the future. But I do not think so. I intend to be the first one in a new battle, which the world needs as it has never needed before, the first to answer the many too many advocates of collectivism and answer them in a manner which will not be forgotten." Every day at ARI, we work to make sure that Ayn Rand's answer will not be forgotten. Help us. Contribute today at AynRand.org/support.
The Ayn Rand Institute's mission is to promote Ayn Rand's philosophy of reason, rational self-interest, and laissez-faire capitalism. We are currently looking for talented, passionate, and bright people who share our goal of advancing Ayn Rand's ideas in the world. The Ayn Rand Institute offers you the opportunity to impact the culture and make a difference each and every day. If you're interested in working at the Ayn Rand Institute, visit us at aynrand.org today. There you'll find details on employment opportunities and how to apply.
Every day we hear from political leaders that the American dream is vanishing because of rising income inequality. The rich are getting richer by rigging the system, leaving the rest of us to struggle to get by. To save the American dream, we're told that we need to fight inequality through tax hikes, wealth redistribution schemes, and a far higher minimum wage. But what if that narrative is wrong? What if the real threat to the American dream is not rising inequality, but forced equality? In their forthcoming book, Equal is Unfair, America's Misguided Fight Against Income Inequality, Don Watkins and Yaron Brook reveal that almost everything we've been taught about inequality is wrong. You'll discover why successful CEOs make so much money and why they should, how the minimum wage hurts the very people it claims to help, why claims of middle-class stagnation are a myth, and more. For more information or to pre-order the book, Equal is Unfair, visit your favorite bookseller or go to Amazon.com.
All right. You're listening to Yaron Brook Show, and we're reviewing 2015. And what are the worrisome trends? What are the problems? What are the disasters? And then a few good things to say about 2015. Unfortunately, not too much. And we started off with free speech under attack, and really at the beyond free speech, kind of a core issue is emotionalism. And if you think about emotionalism and the rise of emotionalism, and you saw the rise of emotionalism with this micro triggering and the anti free speech attitudes where they place emotion at the top and what happens to you emotionally is the center. You saw that a little bit with the Bruce Jenner story you showed with a woman who said she felt like a black person and therefore she was black. But you see it in every way. You see it you see people placing emotion as the primary, placing emotion at the top. That's what's important. That's what counts. Caused by many things. It's caused by an educational system that continuously encourages kids to emote, to have an opinion about anything, about everything, whether they know anything or not, they still need to have an opinion. Where do you get an opinion from if you don't know anything? From your emotions. You spout out whatever you feel like spouting out. It comes from the denigration of reason and judgment. To judge, we are taught, is bad. Judgment means using your mind. To be self-interested, we are taught, is bad. But what is to be self-interested? To be self-interested is to think. To be self-interested is to judge. To be self-interested is to be rational. So when we encourage altruism meaning placing the well-being of others above yourself, the purpose of your life is to serve others, which is what almost everybody preaches today, then what we're telling people is your individual judgment doesn't matter. Your individual reason doesn't matter. Don't use your mind. That's being self-interested. And what do you have left if you don't have a mind? What you have left is the judgment of other people. What you have left is to follow. And what you have left are your emotions. That's it. So when we attack self-interest, when we attack judgment, when we attack individualism, all we are left with at the end of the day is emotionalism. I mean, here's another way to think about it. If you reject reason and self-interest for the sake of religion, what are you left with in terms of making decisions? Well, emotions, because there are no facts associated with religion. There's nothing you can point to. There's nothing you can reason. All you have is emotion. The emotions of the preacher as he's articulating the supposed message to you. Your emotions as you think you're speaking to God or whatever. The emotional content of the holy books as you read them. This is why I don't believe there is a message, one message in the Quran or in the Old Testament or in the New Testament. These are books, all books, that are written to have many, many messages. That's what makes them so successful. You can read into them whatever you want. And what determines what you want is your emotion. They reinforce what you emotionally want them to reinforce. So on the religious side, religion ultimately is a form of emotionalism. And so subjectivism on the leftist side, it's a form of emotionalism. Oh, inequality is a problem. Why? Because I feel like it is. And I'll make up the data in order to reinforce my feelings. And I'll read Krugman over and over and over again every single day to reinforce my feelings. So at the heart of all these is emotionalism. Emotionalism driven by altruism, which means the rejection of individualism, the rejection of self-interest. Emotionalism driven by religion. Emotionalism driven by the left. All the factors are driving us towards, against individual judgment, individual thinking, individual reason, the pursuit of one's own values. Who are you to judge? God forbid I should offend you and your emotions. Well, emotions are not judgments, so they're okay. This is the attack, the fundamental issue of our time. The fundamental issue of our time is the attack from both left and right on reason as man's basic means of survival, on reason as man's only means of knowledge. Under attack from all quarters in 2015, one of the most important manifestations of reason, of liberty, political liberty, but of reason ultimately, is free speech, was under attack. Under attack of a gun, under attack from university administrators, and under attack from laws, legislators all over Europe. All right, of course, if one's talking about Charlie Hebdo, the other big negative in 2015 is the rise of what you would call local terrorism, local terrorists. I mean, this has been around since 9/11. You know, we had terrorist attacks in London, we had terrorist attacks in Madrid, we had terrorist attacks in a variety of different places in Europe, we had attacks on individuals, on groups, shootings, we had attacks, of course, 9/11, but even in the United States, we had, the guy at the military base who shot up and killed a bunch of people, shouting Allah Akbar. But what you saw was a ramping up of the scale, of the intensity, and a ramping up of the domestic side of it, of these are Muslims that were raised in the West. Again, talk about emotionalism. ISIS is all about emotionalism. It's about rallying people around a cry of victory. We're taking land. We are victorious. We are winning. We will establish a caliphate. We will bring back the glory days of Islam. Join our cause. It's emotionalism. And people love winners, fighting for winners, the emotional appeal of a winner. This is why, in my view, if you crushed them, if you devastated them, if you made it clear that in no uncertain terms the West will never succumb, that these bastards cannot win, it will go away. Even the domestic side of it will go away. So what you're seeing is an increase in terrorism and a panic around terrorism. A panic around terrorism. Not a response to terrorism that says we can crush you, we can defeat you, and we are rallying the forces to do that. To some extent, that was a little bit of the response in 9/11. Still pathetic, still completely non-intellectual, completely geared towards the wrong enemy, completely geared towards the wrong place. But at least there was a semblance of, we're going to get them. We're going to crush them. Now, with San Bernardino and Paris, the response is fear. Oh my God, I'm scared. I'm going to shut down celebrations in Belgium for the new year because there's a plot. I'm going to shut down Paris for fear. Fear is the dominant thing that's going on in Europe today. Fear and xenophobia is a consequence. You know, let's not declare war, crush the enemy. Let's close our border. That'll do it. What about the ones inside already? Well, we'll just be afraid of them. Because God forbid anybody should stand up on the podium at any event and say we should profile. We should use those vast resources and technology the NSA has to go after the ones who are suspect, not after everybody. Fear. Our response to terrorism now is a hunkering down. Fear. We want to build walls. Intellectuals who unfortunately passed away a few years ago. David Lewis wrote a book, wrote a couple of books about historically, what happens when empires, when countries, when successful countries build walls to protect themselves against the enemy? They soon die. They are soon destroyed. You don't win wars on the defense. What we don't have today is the self-esteem, the courage, anger, the strength, the confidence. The reason to crush our enemies. Yeah, some of those Republican candidates stand up on the stage and spout toughness, but it comes across as hollow because they can't identify the enemy properly. Cruz again comes closest to identify the enemy properly, but even he has never mentioned Saudi Arabia and has never mentioned what he would actually do about the enemy. Donald Trump, oh, we'd bomb them across. Who? ISIS? Saudi Arabia? Al-Qaeda? Iran? I would cut a better deal with Iran. Is it about cutting a better deal? Is that the issue? Can't think. They can't think. To the theme of 2015, the theme of the decline of Western civilization. If you think about Western civilization, I've talked about this in previous shows. If you think about Western civilization, what is Western civilization? It's two ideas. It's two concepts. It's two ideas, in a sense, invented or resurrected or brought to the forefront during the Enlightenment and manifested themselves in the most flowering way with the establishment of the United States of America. And those two ideas are reason and individualism. And the decline of the Western civilization is the decline of reason and individualism. And in its place, what we're seeing is the rise of emotionalism and collectivism. And you can see that. You can see that. We'll get to this in Donald Trump's campaign. You can see that in the presidential campaign. This presidential campaign is all about emotionalism and collectivism. And the response to terrorism now is not, it's a little bit of anger and a lot of fear. Emotionalism. There's no reasoning it out. There's no thinking about it. There's no looking for solutions. There are no solutions, we are told. We can't stop these people from being radicalized, we are told. Or maybe we could, but to do that, we just have to be much, much nicer to Muslims. That's the level of what people consider thinking in this country today is to stop this. We just need to be nicer. That's what will bring this whole, that's what will stop terrorism, is being nice. All right. So free speech, terrorism. And of course, connected to all this is the whole issue of Muslim migration. I've talked on this show a lot about Muslim migration, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time here on it. But let me just make this point. If you declare war on the jihadis, if you declare war on Islamic totalitarianism, first of all, I believe the war would be short. We could win it swiftly, and you wouldn't have to do anything really other than to win the war. But let's assume the war takes a little bit longer. Then sure, banning Muslim immigrants makes sense. You can't differentiate between them. It's we're at a war. Just do it. Don't have the courage, the balls to declare war and to find the enemy. Just banning Muslim immigration is going to do nothing. The bad guys are going to find a way to get into this country anyway. The ones in this country are being radicalized anyway. And if they can't come into this country, they'll go into other countries and inflict pain over there. There is no solution to the problem we face other than facing it. Muslim migration into Europe, sure, it should be stopped. They're a threat. But first, European countries have to recognize that it's a threat. They can't blame immigrants. They can't blame migration. They have to blame the threat, which is jihadism, Islamic totalitarianism. That's the threat. And they have to do something about that threat. And if you do something about that threat, then it's not a threat anymore. Hey, all right. You know, you got to stop, and you got to focus, and you got to think, and you got to reason. The attack on reason continues. We'll be right back with more of the highlights of 2015 after this break.
Ayn Rand was a radical thinker whose philosophical novels challenged students to reconsider their views on fundamental issues. The Fountainhead, Atlas Shrugged, and Anthem. These works have become classics of American literature that never fail to engage young people and stimulate intense classroom discussion. By offering these works for free to teachers, the Ayn Rand Institute hopes to encourage greater awareness and understanding of Rand's stimulating perspective. If you're a teacher who would like Ayn Rand's books in your classroom, visit AynRand.org. This is at no cost to you. Go to AynRand.org today.
When The Fountainhead was first published more than 70 years ago, Ayn Rand's bold literary vision and groundbreaking philosophy of individualism captured the world's attention. Initially rejected by 12 publishers as too intellectual, the novel became an instant classic and continues to provoke heated debates. What motivates a creative thinker? Is it a selfless desire to benefit mankind, a hunger for fame, fortune, and accolades, the need to prove superiority, or is it a self-sufficient drive to pursue a creative vision independent of others' needs or opinions? Ayn Rand addresses these questions through her portrayal of Howard Roark, an innovative architect who, as she puts, struggles for the integrity of his creative work against every form of social opposition. It's also the story of his love affair with a woman who seeks to defeat him. The Fountainhead is as relevant today as it was when Rand first penned it. The novel was also a personal landmark for Rand. In Howard Roark, she presented for the first time the uniquely Ayn Rand hero, man as he could be and ought to be. Order your copy today at Amazon.com.
You didn't build that. You don't pay your fair share. Who do you think you are? Ayn Rand knew exactly who you are. Rational, productive, independent. You work hard and use your own judgment. You choose your career path, your lifestyle, your values. You're living the American dream. And now you see that there are people who want to take away what you've created and will call their lust to loot a virtue. People who think the needs of others is a claim on your money, your work, your life. Well, how can you fight back? That's what they do at the Ayn Rand Institute. They look closely at public policy beyond sound bites and election cycles, at the fundamental moral ideas that frame crucial debates. They focus on reframing the issues in line with reason, egoism, and individual rights to life, liberty, property, and the pursuit of happiness. Your life, liberty, property, and the pursuit of your happiness. Stand up with them to fight against the sacrifice of your values by making a contribution today at AynRand.org/support. They'll use your money to defend your values.
Every day we hear from political leaders that the American dream is vanishing because of rising income inequality. The rich are getting richer by rigging the system, leaving the rest of us to struggle to get by. To save the American dream, we're told that we need to fight inequality through tax hikes, wealth redistribution schemes, and a far higher minimum wage. But what if that narrative is wrong? What if the real threat to the American dream is not rising inequality, but forced equality? In their forthcoming book, Equal is Unfair, America's Misguided Fight Against Income Inequality, Don Watkins and Yaron Brook reveal that almost everything we've been taught about inequality is wrong. You'll discover why successful CEOs make so much money and why they should, how the minimum wage hurts the very people it claims to help, why claims of middle-class stagnation are a myth, and more. For more information or to pre-order the book, Equal is Unfair, visit your favorite bookseller or go to Amazon.com.
All right, we're back on the Run Book Show. We're doing a review of 2015, and it's turning out to be really depressing. So we'll have to lighten it up in a little bit, but we'll cover a few more points, and then we'll turn to some positives. And maybe you guys can call in with some positives. You guys must have thought of some positives. Not now. Maybe in like 15 minutes, we'll turn positive. You know, maybe prepare a list of the really cool things that happened this year, maybe some movies you saw, some cool technology you discovered, or just some global phenomena, some global things that are happening, or maybe even in the United States, some things that are happening that are really, really cool. I've got a few. I've got a list. Don't worry. Some things in the United States and in the world that are happening. But love to hear from you. So call in 347-324-3075. In about 15 minutes, we'll talk about positive, uplifting, cool things. Because at the end of the day, in spite of all this BS, in spite of all the bad things going on in the world, in spite of all the emotionalism. Yeah, Stuart, thank you. What you said was uplifting, but I've taken it way down from there. So we started on a high note, then dropped dramatically into the abyss. And in about 20 minutes, I'm gonna 15-20 minutes, we're gonna have to try to rise up from it. So a few other things. So again, on an international scale, I want to mention one other thing. Of course, American foreign policy. You can't talk about terrorism, Muslim migration, free speech without President Obama's most important achievement in his perspective of 2015, which is the deal with Iran, right? The deal with Iran. We cut a deal with our enemy. We cut a deal with evil, with a regime dedicated to the killing of Americans, dedicated to Sharia law, dedicated to exactly what the terrorists are dedicated towards. Just they happen to be Shiites, and these terrorists happen to be Sunni, and they happen to have less influence right now in the world in terms of being able to, to come after us. But we got to deal with Iran. Again, no real response from the American people. Quiet. Again, this is the dumbing down of America. Again, this idea of emotionalism. People have given up. And what does Trump tell us? Donald Trump tells us he could cut a better deal. Instead of saying no deal is possible, he could cut a better deal. What do you say about that? What do you say about it? This is a disaster. It's terrible. It emboldens our worst enemies. In spite of the fact that I believe that Iran actually using a nuclear bomb in the future, the probability of that is pretty low. Any probability greater than zero is too high in my book. Okay, let's shift a little bit from terrorism to the economics and what's going on in the world economy and the global economy. And here again, no real good signs, I would say. Mediocrity everywhere. Basically, a world economy that since the Great Recession, since 2008, is barely growing. Now, China's still growing. But again, even in China, growth is dramatically lower. Oil prices tumbled this year, to some extent because of lots of supply. But one of the reasons supply outmatches demand is because demand is growing more slowly. And demand is growing more slowly because the world economy is barely growing. And we're seeing that. Now, I'm all for prices of oil collapsing. That's cool. It raises my life standard. It raises your life standard. And it actually is good long-term for the U.S. economy. But if it's caused by a collapse in demand, or at least a collapse in the growth in demand, that's not a good thing. That is an indicator that economic progress is on a decline. And I think you see that everywhere. You see that in the fact that oil was not the only commodity to collapse, but indeed commodity prices across the board have gone down. And that, to a large extent, I think, symbolizes the fact that demand for those commodities is expected to shrink or at least grow much slower in the future than it has in the past. That means economies are shrinking. And it didn't help, by the way, that the other great achievement of President Obama in 2015 was the signing of this climate change treaty in Paris. That's not going to help. That just means even more economic stagnation. You're seeing the frustration, the desperation with central bankers trying to drive interest rates into negative territory, trying to spur economic growth by making money as cheap as possible. And yet, even though money is as cheap as it could possibly be, the cheapest maybe it's been in history, there's no economic growth and there's no inflation in spite of printing trillions of dollars because there's no demand for loans. And there's no economic, there's no new businesses being started or fewer than historically. As a consequence, money is not circulating. All this printed money is going nowhere. So what we're seeing is economic stagnation. There was a very good article, let me see if I can find it, in the, of all places, in the New York Times. Where is it? I had it here. Yeah, here it is. It was written by Eduardo Porter. It was published on December 1st, 2015. And it was imagining a world without growth. And good for Eduardo Porter. He says, don't. It's horrible. A world without economic growth is terrible. It's a disaster. So even the New York Times publishes an editorial about the awfulness, the horrific nature of a world without growth, and yet that's what we're seeing. Now, part of that is there's actually what's going on in the world today is deflation. Prices are going down. Commodities is one example of that. And there are two reasons why this is happening. Profit margins. The stock market this year was flat. And the reason the stock market was flat this year, one would guess, because markets project the future, is because profit to be flat in the future. That is, profit growth is expected to slow. And why is that? It's because economic growth is flat. It's hard. So the story of 2008 to today in terms of the stock market was that companies increased their profitability by shrinking costs. Increasing productivity, shrinking costs, massive mergers. And the whole point of the mergers is not to grow revenues, but to shrink costs. Well, what the market is telling us right now is that they've shrunk all the costs they can out of their businesses. They've shrunk all they can. What's the upside? Because the economies are not growing and you can only grow revenue. In a sense, on an aggregate, companies can only grow revenue if the world economy is growing. And if the world economy is not growing, they're having a really hard time growing revenue. So what we're seeing is economic stagnation and the political class not knowing what to do about it. And this includes Republicans. And they keep talking about cutting more taxes. But that doesn't help if they keep on taking more and more debt. If they keep sucking more and more money one way or the other out of the private economy, the only way to get the economy growing, and this is across the board, this is knowledge that everybody has, and yet everybody around the world is ignoring, is to dramatically cut government spending and at the same time dramatically cut government regulations. And if you do those things, if you cut government spending, if you cut government regulations, then you will get economic growth. It works every time. By the way, I noticed somebody called and was waiting to participate, and I didn't go to you because I was waiting. I assumed you had something positive to say. So call back in, 347-324-3075, 347-324-3075. After the next break, I'll take some phone calls. For now, I'm not doing it. I just want to ramp up on some of these other things. So continued global economic problems. We solved the Greek problem. It didn't cause all of Europe to collapse. So at least what we did with Greece is we kicked the can even further down the road, as we've been doing time and time again. But the good news on that, and this is the good news, that the Europe did not implode. Europe did not end. Economies did not shrivel. They're still not growing, partially because of Greece, but they're not. But it's mostly because of their own problems. So Greece was a problem this year early on. China in the summer, low economic growth, and low economic growth in emerging markets was a big story in the summer. The stock market collapsed, if you remember, took a big hit during the summer. It's recovered most of that, but it was flat for the year. So not anything economically good to speak about. Okay. Global warming, we've talked about that. It's kind of a, you know, what are they going to do about it story. My big fear for 2016 is that Obama is going to do some stuff unilaterally without Congress to regulate carbon. I do want to talk about this. I want to talk about Black Lives Matter. But let me just say this about, I would say, a big trend in America over the last year, 2015, and maybe in politics the most important trend, and what 2015 will ultimately, I think, be remembered for, is the rise of populism, both on the right and on the left. And this is not just an American trend. This is a global trend. And this is a consequence, by the way, of fear and emotionalism. And if you're interested in the rise of populism, then I'm going to be talking about that on my Chicago show at when is the Chicago show? At 2 o'clock Pacific time on AM 560 in Chicago. And you can listen to that show on the internet. Just look for AM 560 Chicago. And you can listen to it live, and then I upload it onto Blog Talk Radio on either Tuesday or Wednesday, so you'll be able to hear it later in the week. And it'll just focus on the rise of populism, and particularly the rise of Bernie Sanders and the rise of Donald Trump, and what it means for this country. So a huge, huge negative trend in my view, and a real problem, the rise of populism. Just don't have time in this show to cover everything. I want to talk about Black Lives Matter, because on the one hand, 2015 was a year where I think we actually got a glimpse into a real problem. I think some of these police shootings, or many of these police shootings even, are a real problem. And I think it became real that it is a problem to us. I think, I don't know if you followed the shooting of this black man in Chicago. That happened actually in 2014, but really hit the headlines in 2015, where this cop, he was wielding a knife. There were half a dozen policemen there, and this one policeman comes out of his police vehicle and fires 16 shots into this kid, 16 bullets. As he's lying there, he continues to shoot him. Why? And there's a cover-up. They don't release the video. The other policemen cover up for this one cop by telling stories about what really happened, by lying about what really happened. And, you know, they don't indict this policeman until over a year later. And it's clearly, I mean, if you watch the videos, there's no question about what happened here. And I haven't dug deeply into some of the other police shootings, but my suspicion is that, yeah, there is a real problem of police using too much force, police abusing their power, potentially abusing that force more when they engage with blacks than they do with other people of other skin colors or whatever. But it's also true, the flip side. So that's a real issue that I think needs to be examined, needs to be looked at, needs to be talked about. And just because it's an issue that the left raises doesn't mean it's a wrong issue. And one needs to criticize the left about how they raise it, because the left turned it into a war on police and a way to attack police. And what the Black Lives Matter turns it into is a reverse racism issue. And then in Chicago, what the Black Lives Matter have done, and I think they did this in Minnesota and other places, is used it to attack capitalism, to use it to attack the economic system we live under, which is not capitalism. But anyway, so they demonstrate in front of malls and in front of stores, and they prevent people from entering luxury retailers instead of demonstrating in front of City Hall, in front of the police. They demonstrate on Michigan Avenue so to disrupt people's lives. So there's a real issue, police shootings, and just police behavior generally. There's a whole issue around this, about civil forfeitures. There was a statistic this year. It's just a scary statistic. Actually, it's relevant for 2014, but you get these statistics in a lag. Civil forfeitures, this is where they take your stuff before you're tried and convicted. This is when they take your stuff without charging you with a crime even sometimes. Right? Civil forfeitures at the federal level doesn't account for state level and county level and city level. Just at the federal level. Constituted more than $4 billion in 2014, which was more than burglaries. So the government, through civil forfeitures, stole more of our money, took more of our money than burglars did. Now that's a freaky statistic. So there's a whole issue of police behavior. There's a whole issue of the police being armed like the military. There's a whole issue just generally of government agencies, domestic government agencies, being armed as if they're special forces units. And the police shooting on top of that. But the left can't address that without being anti-police and without being racist, often reversed racism. So they're ineffectual. But it's something that we need to talk about. It's something that's important. And it's something that I think came to the forefront during 2015 more so than in any other year. All right. We'll be right back for our final segment of today's show. A positive segment about the good stuff in 20. And I know there's a lot of bad stuff I haven't talked about. And the big one is the rise of populism, which I encourage you to listen to on AM 560 at 2 p.m. this afternoon Pacific time. And you can listen to that online. Just search for AM 560 and you can listen to it live. And, of course, later we upload it to Blog Talk Radio and to iTunes and everywhere else on either Tuesday or Wednesday of next week. We'll be right back.
Selfishness, a virtue? It is according to the moral principles of objectivism. Conventional morality tells you to sacrifice your values to satisfy the needs of others. Ayn Rand opposes that view and offers a new concept of egoism, an ethics of rational selfishness that rejects sacrifice in all its forms. In The Virtue of Selfishness, Ayn Rand defies conventional thought, setting out a philosophy that holds man as a heroic being, with his own happiness as the moral purpose of his life. Explore Rand's new concept of egoism and order The Virtue of Selfishness at Amazon.com today.
You didn't build that. You don't pay your fair share. Who do you think you are? Ayn Rand knew exactly who you are. Rational, productive, independent. You work hard and use your own judgment. You choose your career path, your lifestyle, your values. You're living the American dream. And now you see that there are people who want to take away what you've created and will call their lust to loot a virtue. People who think the needs of others is a claim on your money, your work, your life. Well, how can you fight back? That's what they do at the Ayn Rand Institute. They look closely at public policy beyond sound bites and election cycles, at the fundamental moral ideas that frame crucial debates. They focus on reframing the issues in line with reason, egoism, and individual rights to life, liberty, property, and the pursuit of happiness. Your life, liberty, property, and the pursuit of your happiness. Stand up with them to fight against the sacrifice of your values by making a contribution today at AynRand.org/support. They'll use your money to defend your values.
The Ayn Rand Institute's mission is to promote Ayn Rand's philosophy of reason, rational self-interest, and laissez-faire capitalism. We are currently looking for talented, passionate, and bright people who share our goal of advancing Ayn Rand's ideas in the world. The Ayn Rand Institute offers you the opportunity to impact the culture and make a difference each and every day. If you're interested in working at the Ayn Rand Institute, visit us at aynrand.org today. There you'll find details on employment opportunities and how to apply.
Ayn Rand was a radical thinker whose philosophical novels challenged students to reconsider their views on fundamental issues. The Fountainhead, Atlas Shrugged, and Anthem. These works have become classics of American literature that never fail to engage young people and stimulate intense classroom discussion. By offering these works for free to teachers, the Ayn Rand Institute hopes to encourage greater awareness and understanding of Rand's stimulating perspective. If you're a teacher who would like Ayn Rand's books in your classroom, visit aynrand.org. This is at no cost to you. Go to aynrand.org today.
For 30 years, the Ayn Rand Institute has been on the front lines of the culture wars, introducing millions of students to Ayn Rand's books and ideas, educating young intellectuals who now teach at universities around the world, and speaking out in defense of free speech, free markets, and free minds. You can join our battle for reason, individualism, and capitalism by making your contribution today at aynrand.org/support.
All right, we're back with the review of 2015 on the Iran Book Show. Thank you all for listening. And we're going to start off now. So this is the positive section, right? So we want to talk about good things that happened in 2015. I have a list of good stuff that happened in 2015, and I have a list of some good movies that I saw in 2015 that's also good. So we'll talk about all of that in the remaining 23 or so minutes that we have for the show, but we're going to start. Whoops, I just lost the caller again. I was going to go to you, caller. 361 area code. All right, so you call back. I will take your call, and we will top. And everybody's leaving the show because I'm switching to positive. God forbid anybody should talk about anything good. So people are switching to other things. Okay, I already mentioned a couple of good things that happened this year. Greece, the problems in Greece did not sink the world economy. And neither, by the way, did the Federal Reserve. It didn't help the world economy. It didn't destroy the world. So the world has not ended. That's good. The dollar has not become the currency out there. It hasn't gone to zero in spite of some economists' projections. The U.S. economy is still okay. We're still growing. Most of us, overwhelming majority of us, still have jobs. We're still making some money. We're still living pretty well. And oil prices have come down, which in some respect, at least in my life and in many of your lives, is probably a good thing. So, you know, you're spending less money on fuel. You're spending less money on gas. You're spending less money, hopefully, on electricity, although electricity is tricky because, all these states shifting to windmills and solar panels is driving up electrical costs, just as natural gas and oil is driving down electrical costs. So there's a competition there going on. But overall, I would say that economy's not being good, but it's not being a disaster. So, hey, yay for not being a disaster. I think that's the one good thing that happened this year is we didn't fall off an economic cliff, as again, many people have suspected we will. Okay, we're gonna take a call, and then I'll get into some really good stuff rather than just not negative stuff, right? Not falling off a cliff. It's not really a positive, is it? Hi, you're listening to Iran Book Show. Who's this?
Hey, Iran. This is Dan Harris.
Hey, Dan. How are you?
I'm doing okay. You're doing a great job on the show, so thank you. My positive for today it was recent in the last month or so. I was working with a cousin that's about 10 years old, and he's on a scientific project. And unfortunately, you know, his school didn't really set him up. So I asked him what the scientific method was, and he didn't know. And I looked it through his studies, and it really didn't give a good answer. Thanks for the Logical Leap book that was published. I was able to actually speak about it articulately. And I helped him understand that the scientific method is for identifying causes. And so this got me thinking of an opportunity, and I don't know if the Ayn Rand Institute engages in this kind of opportunity, but their parents obviously see an issue with this kid being sort of against thinking where he sees any opportunity to give up and doesn't know how to use his mind. And I don't think his school's helping him all that much, not encouraging him and things like that. Or maybe they are, they're just not doing it effectively. And so they're looking for any type of way to probably get this kid engaged. And I don't know if the Ayn Rand Institute's help sort of in that regard or not.
You know,
if I could reference them. And
we really don't, because we don't typically deal with preteens, if you will. I'd say pre-15, 16. Because at that point, kids are not philosophical, and we're just not geared towards them. That there are other entities that do. Like, you can go, I think, on the websites of LaPorte Academy or the Van Damme Academy, or there's a new project called Mystery Science, which is a Silicon Valley company started by an objectivist who's putting together kind of a rational curriculum in science for grade school kids. And so there's a lot of content out there. But this is the sense in which I really like what you're saying. At the end of the day, the good stuff is going to be one-on-one. The end of the day, the good stuff is, I mean, the most positive thing of 2015 is there's more good objectivist content out there in the world today than at any point in human history, right? Since, including when Ayn Rand was alive. And to the extent that we can use that, like you did with this kid, you can use that in your interactions with other human beings, we're going to have an impact. We're going to change the world. There are better opportunities to change the world today than at any point because of all these books and all this content. And, you know, this is an example of work on the scientific method, the Logical Leap, which is a terrific book that which if you read, you'll have a much better grounding on the scientific method. And then use that to educate, to teach. Because at the end of the day, what we need to teach is not politics. What we need to teach is reason, is how to think. And if they think right, then the politics will come relatively easy. But they first need to be able to think, and there's nothing more important than teaching the scientific method to kids in order to enable them to think. So thanks, Dan. Go ahead.
Sorry, I just had to refine my question based on your clarification. Would there be anything that I could read to help, motivate this kid other than that, I guess? I don't know if there was anything in addition to the Logical Leap that might help. Like you said, there was a program, or is there any type of workshop or anything?
But look on Ayn Rand Institute, on the campus site at ARI.org, if you click on campus, there's a course there by Leonard Peikoff, and it's available for free on campus. And I encourage everybody to go to campus and learn, right? That's what we need to do, is learn. Where you can actually take Leonard Peikoff's philosophy of education course, which will provide you a lot of think of tools and a lot of information. And then what I would do is look under Ayn Rand in the lexicon and look for anything related to education. And that'll give you some more tools to be able to use with this kid and other kids. Hopefully that'll give you a lot more information on how to motivate this kid. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks for calling. Thanks for listening. Now the phone lines are exploding. Okay. Hi, you're on the Iran Book Show. Who's this?
Hi, Iran. This is Dave from Portland, Oregon.
Hey, Dave. How are you?
Oh, good. Good.
So make it quick and make it positive.
It's I guess an underlying point about the police officers. Is this a good time, or should we save it?
Let's save it. Let's do a show on the police officers, just because I'd like to make this positive, and I only have 15 minutes. Okay.
Oh, absolutely. I guess the positive would be. Thank you. Thank you.
Sure. Hi, who's this? You're on the Iran Book Show.
Happy New Year, Dr. Book. This is Skylar.
Hey, Skylar, how's it going?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. Well, so tell me something good that happened in 2015.
Two things, really quick. The Amazon series, Man in the High Castle, and Mozart in the Jungle.
All right.
Definitely recommend them.
Okay, good. Mozart in the Jungle, I'm eager to watch it because I understand it's about an orchestra.
Yes, it's zany, it's quirky, it's offbeat, but it has really good messages, and it's shot beautifully.
Great, I'm going to watch it. And Man in the High Castle, I just watched the first episode. So thanks for the recommendation. I'm going to spend 2016 following up on those two recommendations on Amazon. I appreciate it. All right, a few other things. Sorry, Scarlett, I think I might have cut you off there, but I appreciate the call, and those are really two good recommendations. Let me run through a few things that I think were positives. The legalization of same-sex marriage in the United States and growingly across Europe and across the world. This is great, guys. This is terrific. The fact that two people can fall in love and now can get married and can live and enjoy the legal protections that marriage affords. Now, I don't believe the state should be involved in this to begin with, but if the state is involved to bar people who are in love from actually living and enjoying the legal benefits of that life, this is maybe the best thing that happened in 2015. Really exciting. Now, again, I'm not going to argue with you about the Supreme Court ruling, whether it was the right ruling based on the right rationale and all that. And I know some of you don't agree on this, but that's the best thing that happened in 2015 in my book. Best thing that happened. So, does the left believe in this? Yeah, but who cares, right? This is not a left-right thing. This is an individual right thing. This is the ability. This is the pursuit of happiness thing. Pursuit of happiness thing. Two individuals who are gay can now pursue their happiness freely and get legal protection. So I know I'm already getting comments on the comment board and people have dropped off the call already, off the show, because they disagree. But hey, as you know, I'm not gay. That's irrelevant. I'm happy for gay people out there. I'm happy for them. They get to exercise equal protection before the law. Okay. So that's a huge positive this year. Somebody mentioned on the chat legalization of marijuana. Yeah, okay. I mean, I'm all for that, and I think it's a good thing. I can't get overly excited about that. People have now more opportunities to be high. I like the fact that police don't have to chase now after marijuana guys, and they can focus on real crimes. I like the fact that we're not spending a huge amount of money incarcerating people who trade or smoke marijuana or travel with marijuana in states like Colorado. I'd like to see marijuana legalized in the entire United States for those reasons. I don't really care that much about the people who use the drugs. I'm much more concerned about the injustice and just horrific nature of the war on drugs, which is just horrific, just awful. And I'd like to see all drugs legalized. And I'm not sure that legalizing marijuana is actually driving us in that direction because it's not being done on any kind of principled basis. All right. So same-sex marriage is the highlight of the year for me in terms of good news in politics. South America. We have to talk about Latin America. I know Lee Ron is jumping up and down for me to talk about Latin America. Venezuela. Elected, the opposition won an election there. Now, I don't know much about the opposition, but it's amazingly better. Amazingly better than anything Venezuela has had forever. So, the fact that finally Chavez's regime, Chavez's legacy has the opportunity just a little bit to be overturned is fantastic. And that's good news in Latin America. Argentina replacing the Kirchner gang with somebody who seems better. His favorite book is The Fountainhead. How bad could he be? So I'm all for the changes in Latin America. And you see it even in Brazil. Massive demonstrations out there against the corruption of the current presidents, movement to impeach the current president. A lot of it, I don't know how much of it, but a certain segment of those demonstrations, I'm told, motivated by Atlas Shrugged. I'm actually going to Brazil in April. I'm going to be doing a talk there in front of 2,000 people at the Liberty Forum. And the theme, supposedly, of the Liberty Forum this year is Atlas Shrugged, because of the role Atlas Shrugged has played in this real uproar in Brazil. So, you know, that's good stuff. That's good stuff. So Latin America, a lot of interest in Latin America, a lot of movement politically in the right direction in Latin America. Okay. I'm just running through a few. On all of these, we can do a show at some time. But we'll run through of these. Violence in America, in spite of everything, violence in America is on the decline. Indeed, terrorism, war, and murder together remain a minor cause of death worldwide and a lower cause of death worldwide probably than in any time in human history. So violence generally in the world, the trend since the 1700s, but the trend in more modern times since the 1990s has been down. And that's a good thing. That's a good thing. Okay, let's talk about tech and science. Some really exciting stuff on tech and science. Drones. Have you seen these drones? You can navigate them from your iPad, and they have cameras on them, and you can watch your neighbors. And I don't know what they're useful for, but they're cool. They're really, really cool. These are like the best adult toys in the tech sense ever. So a friend of mine has one, and he showed me how to use it, and it's just unbelievably cool. And they're just going to get better and better and cheaper. Now, granted, the FAA requires you to register your drone now, so they're going after the drones. But stop laughing at my adult toys comment. I see on the chat everybody's enjoying my adult toys. They might actually be better adult toys than drones, but I'm not going to go there. So drones, really, really cool. Alexa, how many of you have used Alexa, Amazon Alexa? I got it. My wife got it from a friend of ours as a Christmas present. I guess me and my wife got it from a friend of mine who works at Amazon. And Alexa is so cool. So cool. You can talk to it. You can ask it questions, add stuff. Voice recognition, amazing. Fabulous, fabulous technology. Alexa, check it out. I think it's Echo. The thing is called Echo. And you say, Alexa, what's the time? Alexa, set a timer for 20 minutes. She's sitting in our kitchen, and my wife talks to Alexa all the time. So now when I travel, my wife will not be alone. She'll have Alexa to keep her company. Now that's pretty cynical. Okay. I just heard about this on an NPR story. NPR, I love NPR, among other things, because it has these kind of stories in it, which you will not get from any other media outlet. This is this new gene editing method. CRISPR, I think it's called CRISPR. It sounds amazing. It sounds like, this is a huge step forward in terms of the ability to go into cells and manipulate genes. This is technology that has the potential to fight cancer, to extend human life, to solve problems of birth defects. People even talk about this as creating, designer babies. But I'm not against designer babies, so I don't really have a problem with that. So I think that's another advantage. This is going to be huge going forward. So CRISPR, they did an interview. They did a show on NPR, and they interviewed scientists from a bunch of different fields in biology. And everybody was just raving about this. This is really, really, really cool. So gene editing, look at that. It's very, very exciting. Another exciting thing in biology is in 2015, we found the first new class of antibiotics in 30 years. The first new class of antibiotics. Everybody's been panicky, fear-mongering, emotionalism over these superbugs. Well, these antibiotics will be able to treat superbugs, these antibiotic-resistant bacteria. And the way they found these new antibiotics is by using a new tool that has the potential to discover many, many new antibiotics. So there's a whole new field now to discover new antibiotics, which is very exciting. They were very exciting. So I think it's like an iChip. It's somewhat, I don't know. I don't know anything about it, so I should shut up. It's just cool. Technology, science is cool. And a lot of cool things are happening in technology of science, in spite of the horrible politics, in spite of the terrorists, in spite of the global warming alarmists, in spite of America's decline everywhere else, Silicon Valley and the rest of the technological and some of the scientific community are just amazing. This is Julian Simon's principle that the only resource that is in limited supply is human reason, human ingenuity, human thinking. Okay, another one, desalination. We have a drought in California, not in San Diego. Not if you live in San Diego. There's plenty of water in San Diego. Why? Because they just opened up a desalination plant. It was too expensive because of regulations and because of all the price of electricity in California, which is high because of so-called alternative energies. But the fact that they built a desalination plant, cool. And on the other one on the energy front is not. I've heard of this. That they opened up a second cooling tower at a nuclear power plant in Tennessee, the first one that's been opened in decades, and actually nuclear power plant that was expanded. Wow, that's cool. And the number one, second, I guess, the number one. The thing that really stands out in 2015 from my personal perspective, right, from the perspective of the Ayn Rand Institute, a lot of good things happened, and if you should all be, of course, contributors to the Ayn Rand Institute, because that's how you support the show. You support the show by writing a small check to the Ayn Rand Institute. A big check would be better, but a small check is okay. Any amount is good. You can go to ayn rand.org/support, and you can make a contribution. For those Europeans, you can go to the Ayn Rand Europe website, and there you can even make a contribution on Bitcoin, using Bitcoin. So that's all good. That's all good. Good news that the Ayn Rand Institute is accepting Bitcoin now for contributions. So do that. A lot of good. But if you do that, you'll get our annual report and you'll find out all the wonderful things that are happening. But if I had to put one thing, and that is that objectivism in 2015, in many respects, went global. It's been global for a while, but it went global in 2015. We established ARI Europe in 2015. ARI Israel is really got some exciting stuff going on. ARC Israel has got exciting stuff happening in 2016, but it really got a push in 2015. We've got programs on objectivism in Bulgaria, in Serbia. Objectivism is bubbling into the surface in places like Poland, Kiev, St. Petersburg, primarily in Eastern Europe. But then you've got a lot of interest in Latin America. You've got a lot of interest in South America. I did my first third. But it was a real speaking tour in Ecuador, in Colombia, and in Peru. Who would have thought that I would be speaking in those places, right? It discovered universities where they're teaching good stuff. So Latin America. In a couple of weeks, I'm leaving I'm doing 3 talks in Tokyo, a week-long seminar in Beijing, and at least 2 talks in Hong Kong. Objectivism, my friends, has gone global. Ayn Rand has gone global. More translations of our books in more languages exist today than ever before, being read by more people than ever before. Maybe the revolution won't happen in the United States of America after all. Who knows? All right. But I'm excited. I didn't get to movies. We'll get to movies next week. We will talk about the movies from 2015. We'll talk about some other stuff. You're listening to the Iran Book Show. Keep listening. Let's make this a big show. Tweet about it. Facebook about it. Follow me on Twitter. Follow me on Facebook. But let the world know that this is a show worth listening to. Talk to you all next week, same time, same place.